Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings from San Francisco. How's things with you?
Things are good, man. You know, it's been a good, relatively easy week and a good weekend. But it's getting cold, Rohit. You know, I'm having to layer up. How are things with you in San Francisco?
Oh, very good. I mean, it's, you know, San Francisco, the winter is usually the summer. We're having some nice days. Gets cold by evening, but all good. I'm angling for a tweed jacket, and maybe, you know, I want to do a conversation about this at some point of time. As you were mentioning, I think it's a great idea that, you know, just some, like, what are the things that middle-aged men should have in their wardrobe?
Correct.
The other thing I would love to do an episode about is things that the English or the British do very well. And I think that's coats and jackets, biscuits, pubs, a whole bunch of things. So we'll get to that. But for today, you know, we're talking about this. I think let's do one of our weekend review kind of lie of the land episodes, focusing on largely the economy, you know, and maybe some issues of the judiciary and touching upon, you know, really this alarming culture of censorship through social media and more widely that the government has introduced. Coming to the economy, two quick points. One, consumer spending is down for the first time in decades, 4 or 5 decades, I think. And the government's own survey, which showed this, has been nixed and junked by the Modi government. Second, after decades, poverty is on the rise again. Again, the BJP government is kind of trying to control the information. They're doing various things, blaming it on Congress. And the argument that they're making is that this is indicative of a global slowdown. But the fact that there is a global slowdown is a kind of convenient excuse, because in the Indian case, these are direct results of the absolutely disastrous economic policies of Modi. It will not affect his popularity, because he didn't run on an economic platform at all after the noises of Vikas the first time around. He's been running since then, governing and running purely on the basis of, you know, a particularly vile form of majoritarianism. But that is what the reality is.
Okay. Well, look, I think the economy is obviously something that affects quite a lot of people. Every person living in India is being impacted by what the economic performance of the country is. I think this is a very interesting one, because over the last 10 years, if you take the last 10 years into consideration, in the last 6 of those years, we have had the amping up of the rhetoric around economic performance almost becoming shriller and shriller, while the actual economic performance, irrespective of various attempts to massage the data, has been declining. Now, the moment you open a conversation around this line, it becomes very emperor's new clothes. Because if you're saying that the emperor is naked and is not looking good, people automatically assume that to be a critique of your patriotic self, right? You know, that you're not, by looking at numbers which have for the 70 years after independence been more or less a valid benchmark of whether as a nation we are growing or not economically, all of a sudden contesting that, but looking at the decline of those numbers over a period of time, you're all of a sudden seen as some kind of a person who is, you know, not patriotic enough, or, you know, is biased and critical. Aside from the economic decline, what I find very difficult to understand is, on the one hand, the rhetoric that this country, our country India, is becoming a fantastic economic superpower. That's the rhetoric that's been amped up over the last 6 years, with our Prime Minister swanning about in different locations in the world, hugging, handshaking, and, you know, dancing with different leaders. So that's the rhetoric. The reality is the economic performance indicators are going down. What I can't understand is, how can you appreciate the rhetoric while the reality is going the other way, right? Because on the one hand, you can't be patriotic on the rhetoric, but, you know, when the reality jars. And conversely, by saying that the reality, if people are calling out that the reality is not doing as well, that doesn't mean that you're not a patriot. So this juxtaposition of patriotism and economic well-being is the one thing that has disturbed me, because I'm not an economic person by training, but that's what's galling to me.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And the thing is, you know, that's been kind of the larger redefinition of patriotism, which is that questioning anything the government says or anything the government does is unpatriotic. So the logic now is that, the economy is doing badly, but to draw attention to this is even more unpatriotic. So you're supposed to sort of bounce about, jump about, saying that sab theek hai. But, you know, that's not what the job of an economist is. And this has been happening. This has not come out of nowhere, because, you know, a bunch of people in the Reserve Bank resigned. You know, Dr. Rajan was given, Raghuram Rajan was given an extension initially. Then he was asked to leave because I think, you know, he's more charismatic and independent and autonomous than Modi. So there's definitely some element of personal jealousy there in terms of attention. But also because he wanted to clean up the banks, the public sector banks have kind of become a way for corrupt BJP politicians to, and for cronies of the Modi government, to just kind of fill their pockets, right? That's what Nirav Modi did, and Vijay Mallya, who had politicians from both parties in his pocket, that's what he did. But even the replacements that he had, who we assume are people who may have had some kind of sympathy towards Hindu nationalism, or at least may have been more neutral, or may not have had associations with the previous government, you know, they resigned. People from other economic bodies, or bodies that, you know, deal with economic indicators, they resigned. Demonetization, we now know, has been a disaster. It's absolutely no two ways about it. But you're right, this, you know, culture of aggressive nationalism means that even drawing attention to this somehow gets you to, you know, be anti-national and so on. But the thing is that, you know, this is going to bite a lot of people, including Modi supporters. To me, will this be the thing that swings the tide? Because I see people who are diehard Modi fans pigheaded enough to either come up with convoluted justifications and to find other scapegoats. You know, the global slowdown, Congress is to blame, Rahul Gandhi is to blame, pollution is to blame, climate change is to blame. So that there is an economic slowdown which in part was created by these disastrous policies is, I think, one tragedy. But the fact that people are still defending Modi is another tragedy.
Right. Well, look, I think let's take some specific examples, right? Because, you know, this we can live at this kind of theoretical, kind of almost broad meta philosophical level. But let's take specific examples. So there is some information that is coming to light about the Rafael deal. And again, this is not being done with conspiracy in mind. There's something that came before the courts, and the courts have said that, you know, we will not scrutinize this deal any further, right?
Right.
But what is concerning in this deal, and you mentioned this earlier before when we were just dialing in to talk to each other. So there is one of the Ambanis is involved as the sole supplier for building these or building spare parts for this aircraft. What's the score there, Rohit? What actually is going on? Some kind of nepotistic number is going on.
Right. So, I mean, one of the things is that, you know, there's a kind of Gujarati or Guju, if one can use the colloquialism, crony capitalism going on, right? Modi's, a lot of his people, you know, these bureaucrats from his Gujarat chief minister days who are Gujaratis themselves, have been elevated to high positions. You look at all the big industrialists who are Gujarati, the Ambanis, Adanis, they're made out like bandits. So the contract that was signed, the Indian partner would be Anil Ambani, who A, is completely in debt, B, has run his share of the Reliance businesses into the ground. And, you know, there's obviously the completely opaque, inscrutable accounting structure. So a lot of shadiness. He's been awarded these contracts when he has zero experience in any kind of military equipment production. So that's shady. And then the oddest thing about the deal is that they scrapped the terms in which the deal had been negotiated by the Congress. They renegotiated it for a higher payment. And I think they've never been able to provide a really satisfactory explanation. And this, I say this not because I'm ideologically a critic of the BJP and of Hindu nationalism, but literally, I have read, you know, whatever explanations they put out in the public domain. And they have not been able to explain why the cost at which they're purchasing a plane now from Rafale is, or Rafale, whatever it's called, is, however it's pronounced, is higher than what the Congress had negotiated. So the obvious answer basically is that in that inflated price, the inference is that there are these very, very generous kickbacks that are, built in, and that money is going to go to a bunch of people. Now, I don't want to suggest any connection, but I just want to add that in this time of economic slowdown, Amit Shah's son, Jay Shah, who has a previous record of being a failed businessman, his, there was a story recently, which again, it's only been, picked up by one or two of the last independent standing publications, like The Caravan. None of the mainstream media organizations, CNN's partner, The Times or the India Today Group have actually run with it. His company has made a some incredible 1700 percent increase in profit or in, revenue, or not profit, but in revenue, I think. So obviously right. What's happening is that there's a bunch of these contracts being handed out, which into which these kickbacks are baked. And secondly, the theory that one could be led to believe is basically that the way people are bribing the Modi government is to bribe Amit Shah, perhaps Modi also, I don't know. And it's happening through his son Jay Shah's company. And this is why, with a straight face, Modi and Shah go on, talking about the independence of the courts and about fighting corruption. So the whole thing is a mess. And to me, galling that the people who went to town talking about fighting corruption and brought the BJP into power, they are not being critical enough because they're such fanboys of Modi and Shah.
I think, Rohit, the very straight question for this is, since when did Ambani start making aeroplanes?
Yeah, since he and Modi are both Gujaratis, and his Gujju bhai came into power, basically. That's it.
So I'm not saying for a moment that there wasn't corruption in the previous regime. Rajiv Gandhi and Bofors is a classic case. It's been unsubstantiated, as we've done the round. But Rajiv Gandhi didn't get one of his cronies to start making guns.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So you're talking about next level shit here, where not only is there corruption, but you're kind of embedding yourself in the supply chain by nepotism.
And the thing with corruption, I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off, just a very quick point that yes, I mean, it's the principle, it's not just about numbers. But to give you some perspective, we are now talking about thousands of crores. Bofors was a 64 crore issue, right? 64 crores. And 64 right. crores back in the day was more than it's now. I get, purchasing power parity and equivalence and inflation and all of that. But the scale and scope of corruption now is staggering. And
I think what you're alluding to is that it's becoming tricky to question and scrutinize people. Even the law of the land is backing off from scrutiny. And the reason being, even in our kind of relatively informed or publicly informed conversation, whatever we are talking about is in public domain. We are not privy to any state secret. Even when you look at the bits of the puzzle, so government issues tender is given, and then there's a partnership with a company which, up until day X, wasn't in the business of making aeroplanes or defense equipment. All of a sudden, this person makes defense equipment, and one of the most important contracts points to him. We are gradually becoming like some kind of a tin pot African nation where, the man who has the diamond exporting license is second cousin to the press president, right? And I think that, and with the greatest respect to all diamond producing African nations, I think it is a travesty. What we are arguing about is, what we're trying to highlight is that the levels of corruption, at what level does it stop? Because there is one where somebody takes a kickback in government. So we've gone from scrutinizing that to not only, we do not know at this stage where there has been, so as you say, the Congress government's price for a jet was $100. The BJP's price, even with the passage of time, is $150. So between those two time points, the nation is paying $50 more per aircraft or whatever the number is. And the second is the subcontracting number with this kind of Gujarati Ministry of Defense maneuver that's going on. That is concerning. The other thing to pick up, so we've talked about Rafale, we've talked about the economic performance, the rhetoric, the rhetoric of economic improvement and the reality of the economic numbers. The other thing I want to talk about was Vodafone, their global chief. And because this, the other Ambani, I don't know whether it's the other Ambani or the same Ambani, the guy who runs Jio.
That's the other Ambani, Mukesh Ambani.
Yeah. So what has happened is, on that front, what has happened is Jio has been doing things which have been slightly underhand and slightly aggressively competitive and, you know, running circles around. They're not technically doing anything illegal, but they're kind of on the gray. Let me give an example. Basically, when you call somebody from one network to the other, there's a particular time frame within which the call must be accepted. And I think these guys have been playing around with those numbers, whether it's a 30-second wait or a 20-second wait, which is the industry standard, so that people get a missed call and the people from, say, Vodafone have to call back Jio numbers. Then Jio picks up the money. Or some such thing, which is essentially the interconnect between networks is being fiddled with, right? And this is a kind of a very low-level operational thing that I'm talking about. And I think Vodafone has got to a point where it says, this is really stupid. We can't do business in a country where the laws are being hedged to suit people who are in power and their cronies. And so my wider point is that, look, this government will be here for a couple more terms, and then it will probably go. It will be changed by a change of political party. At the moment, our opposition is kind of rubbish. But by the time it leaves, it would have kind of taken down the institutions that were supposed to safeguard our country. Right?
This is such a good point, and this is exactly what a friend of mine who was over, we had friends, some friends over yesterday, this is exactly what the gentleman was saying. He was saying, you know, what do you think? And I said, I'm actually optimistic. And he was talking not just about economics, about politics generally. And just, I apologize for cutting in Bunty and the digression.
No,
I was saying that, you know, to me, the fact that the BJP is not the majority party in any number of states, the fact that it has to seek recourse to this brutal dissent, locking down Kashmir, throwing, you know, activists into jail, shutting down anyone who's even, you know, cracks a joke on Modi, the fact that they have to do this means that there is no natural support for Modi. I mean, Modi has dominance, but not he's not as hegemonic, or the BJP is not as hegemonic as it seems. So my logic, my point was that in the short term, things will get worse, they'll get much darker, and then the pendulum will swing back. And my friend said that that's absolutely right, but he said in the bargain, the damage that would have been done to all our institutions is going to be so severe that it's going to have a long-lasting impact. And I think that's the point you're making, which is, I think, spot on.
Yeah, I think the economic fortunes of a nation go up and down, right? And that is par for course. What is disturbing is the difference between the rhetoric and the reality, which we've clocked. And we have used two case studies, let us call it that, Vodafone and Rafael. One where a crony of the government is kind of embedded in an unqualified manner. Obviously, it's not beyond the realms of magic for Ambani to create an institution that helps support the manufacture and running of aircrafts and defense armaments. The question then becomes, what happened to the Hindustan Aeronautic Limited,
exactly,
which is a publicly owned company? What will that organization do, which has been built and you know, employs a great number of people and produces, I think the Tejas has been produced by that organization, which is our light fighter aircraft. So yeah, it just all we're trying to do, and again with Vodafone, the question is, you know, you've got this like global organization that wants to do business in India. It's doing something which touches quite a lot of other people's lives, you know, in a kind of Vodafone's mobile phone service. And how that is being fiddled and gamed to suit particular political dispensation. So this corruption and economic importance or degradation of economic performance is something that we feel that in our little way we should draw attention to. And obviously, we look forward to what our listeners say in terms of, you know, whether they have seen this being expressed in other areas, right? We know this is happening in educational institutions where, you know, central appointments are being fiddled. We know that the judiciary is being gamed. And again, I don't know whether we've got benchmark data to say whether it's being gamed more or less or just as much. My feeling is that it's being gamed slightly more than in the past. Never has India had a pristine system.
No.
So let's not pretend that, you know, the BJP are doing something that was not par for course. What we are trying to say is that in their actions and their deeds, they are systematically destroying structures So it's not just, you know, making the extra buck, but it's ensuring that the structure that is there to oversee the next generation of governments, the next 70 years of this country, are damaged, which is concerning.
So I'm going to add a few points about Vodafone. And, you know, this is an excellent article. So it was just on BBC News, 15 November 2019. And it's written by Vivek Kaul. Vivek Kaul is an economist. He's on Twitter. Shout out to him. I mean, I learn a lot just reading Vivek's tweets. I don't know him. So Vodafone has posted a record second quarter loss of 510 billion rupees, which is the equal to 5.4 billion pounds or $7 billion. And this is in part because of, you know, Jio's tactics, which have been, you know, slashing prices dramatically. But it's also because the government says that all these foreign telecom companies or these foreign investors, that they own a bunch of taxes to the government. So there's a contention about adjusted gross revenue. So that means how much, what percentage of the revenue earned by the telecom companies needs to be shared with the government's Department of Telecommunication. So they have been disagreeing since 2005 with the definition of adjusted gross revenue. And the government wants a much wider definition, including, you know, sale of assets, interest earned on deposits, not just revenue. So the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the government, and I'm reading from Vivek's article, so credit to him, which means that telecom companies need to pay the authorities 900 billion rupees cumulatively. And Vodafone's share alone of this is 390 billion rupees. So this new change or charge, sorry, means that losses have gone up dramatically. Now, Vodafone is saying that we are not going to exit India, but the Vodafone CEO, Nick Reed, made a remark saying financially, and quote, financially there's been a heavy burden through unsupportive regulation, excessive taxes, and on top of that, we got the negative Supreme Court decision. So he made this remark last week, I think. So he, again, the day later, he apologized to the government. This is classic Indian government. Someone must have called up, screamed at him, you know, because in the long run, India is going to be the second biggest or third biggest or whatever telecom market in the world. But so he apologized. And Vivek notes, regardless of the apology, the bigger issue is that it's written off its India investment to zero. And the buzz is that neither Vodafone, which is the, nor Aditya Birla Group, those are the Indian partners and the other owners of Vodafone Idea. That's what it goes by in India, Vodafone-Idea. Neither of them are now keen on bringing in any new money into the partnership. So the point is that if Vodafone, which is a huge company, exits, it's going to show India in a very poor light. And from a signaling point of view, it's going to be disastrous. Because if someone who was willing to bet big on India is saying that our investment is zero, chalo, that is what it is. But over and above that, in addition to writing off our investment to zero, we just are packing up our money. It's really going to not cut a very good image.
I think the wider point that this leads to, and this is going to be my concluding point. For the last 20 years, we've been hearing this nautanki about India being an economic superpower, right? Now that, and so this is, BJP is not the only party guilty of it. You know, the Congress party also did it, saying, you know, we were poised to be. But I think India, because of inefficiencies in government and endemic corruption and nepotism, it is going to be perpetually poised, I do not think.
I know, yes.
And so the Bhak narrative on this is, you don't know, we will show them. Kuch nahi hone wala. Because, you know, if this is the way you treat globally powerful businesses, and, you know, then you'll have this kind of lefty argument that, you know, if they go, that doesn't matter, there'll be other people to fill the gap. It may be true, but fundamentally, what it's signaling is, as a nation state where we can do business with the rule of law, you know, that's slipping us by. And in a limited way, Vodafone's anecdote goes to that. So we've looked at both sides, supply and demand. Vodafone, an organization supplying a service which has been mistreated, and the defense sector, which needs a particular type of aircraft, which is being kind of gamed by the government for its own benefit. So, interesting times, you know. And again, I said that, you know, with all due respect to African diamond mining countries, it'll be interesting to see how the Indian economy nets out. Because if all we are producing is ghee and papad, it's going to be a tragedy.
I have a tweet that tells us something about that. We'll save that for another time. So we'll just wrap up on this. I think that's a good note to end on. Just a quick note of apology for the static that came in at various points of time. We know it's been happening off and on. We know it's frustrating. We are working on it. You know, sometimes we have to restart, but we're trying to get a better, you know, sort of infrastructure, a system of infrastructure going. But in the meantime, we hope you'll bear with us. So we'll be back next week. And, you know, we are trying this new format. So listeners, please, like, you know, write into us at indiaexplainedpodcast@gmail.com. We are doing longer episodes now and maybe posting them a little less frequently. But we'll keep adapting. And, you know, we are grateful for your support as always. So please keep listening. Okay, Bhante, on that note, I think I'll sign off.
Salud, then. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bhante would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.